Okay, while people are filing in here, I'd like to go ahead and introduce myself. Hi, my name is Jim Kreutz. I'm a member of the local Houston chapter. We've been very fortunate here in Houston to have two outstanding directors of our chapter. When I first joined, we had Mr. Bill Gilbert, who's sitting up close to the front. And as you all know, Bob Dorrell is our chapter director today. They both put on outstanding meetings. They always had a huge lineup of great guest speakers, and they worked their tails off. It was almost like a full-time job. And I think that's why our chapter's done so well here. Okay, I was introduced to Sabre a little over 20 years ago by a former Major League pitcher, Tim McNamara. It's a picture of Tim up on the screen here, on the right. Can anyone recognize his high school catcher and best friend on the left? It's kind of a grainy picture. He's got a Cubs sweater on. He's a catcher. Gabby Hartman. Okay. Tim's best friend with the early 20s Braves was an outfielder named Casey Stengel. Anyone ever heard of him? In the 50s, Tim was at a Yankees game, and before the game, Casey introduced several of his young pitchers to Tim, and he introduced him as Cy Young. So Casey always had a good sense of humor. This is Tim and I at his home in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Okay, everyone knows that Jackie Robinson was Branch Rickey's choice to break the color barrier. But he wasn't Branch's first choice. That honor goes to a ball player that the Dodgers tried to sign twice in 1943, and they failed in both attempts. Just to kind of give you a little background on Jackie Robinson signing, in 1945, the Dodgers' top scout, Tom Greenway, followed Jackie and the Kansas City Monarchs for about 20 games. And at the conclusion of that, he gave Branch Rickey the thumbs up. So 2 weeks after the Japanese surrender ended World War II, Rickey and Robinson met late August 1945. And by October, Jackie had signed a Brooklyn contract. So now we're going to back up 2 years to 1943. Having come over from the St. Louis Cardinals organization, Branch Rickey was the new Dodger president. And the first thing he did was conduct a meeting with the Brooklyn Dodger owners, asking their permission to sign colored ball players, which they did. They granted him permission. And he had a couple of reasons for that. One, the war effort had depleted not only the Major League roster, but the minor league system as well of talent. And Rickey also wanted to right a wrong. So with the owner's blessing, he scheduled a secret meeting with his top scout, again Tom Greenway, at the Biltmore Hotel in Kansas City, which was close to where the scout lived. He lived in Willard, Missouri. And Rickey was so concerned with it being a secret meeting that he signed the hotel registry as Tom Greenway. So a short time later, Greenway shows up and he goes to sign the registry, and someone's already signed his name there, and it kind of threw him for a loop. And so in a 1953 newspaper article, Tom describes the meeting, and he said, all that secrecy had me buffaloed, and I got more curious after he sat down and talked to me about things that had happened in his life. He told me one story about the time a hotel refused to allow a catcher from his Ohio Wesleyan team to spend the night there, and he was a Negro ball player, and I began to get the idea. So in the hotel room, basically Rickey laid out his plan for that summer. He wanted Tom to go to Mexico to scout for colored ball players. Tom was okay with that, and he especially wanted him to look at a Cuban shortstop named Silvio Garcia. But Tom only had two problems with that. One, he didn't want to keep it a secret from his wife Florence. And two, no habla español. So Rickey said, no problem, take Florence with you and take a translator. Well, Florence made the trip, But it seems the translator didn't. He went on a drinking binge in San Antonio, and they left him behind. I think it was the tequila shots that got to him. Okay, so that was that secret session of the Biltmore Hotel was the only face-to-face meeting that Ricky and Greenwade had prior to his trip to Mexico City. All the correspondence was either by cable or by written correspondence, and we got a portion of that from the family of Tom Greenwade. This is the first one that Greenwade received from his home in Willard. I'm not sure how well you can see this, but let me kind of give you the highlights here. It's titled Personal and Confidential. Dear Tom, I'm enclosing some very confidential material. In the newspapers, you will see averages. I don't believe you can afford to show these to Turo. You will have to work them out for yourself. And Turo is probably Oscar Turo. He was a Mexican pitcher that played for the Cardinals in 1918 to 1920. So why did they need to hire this former Cardinal pitcher? Well, Greenwade was very adept at evaluating a player's talent, but he was kind of out of his own in Mexico in evaluating the guy's character, which was important to the Yankees, or the Dodgers, I'm sorry. So he needed this player to help him out. And it was run under the guise, supposedly, I'm assuming, of a Brooklyn Black Dodger ball club scouting effort. Okay, now, these next two documents, they're not really related to baseball, but they set up they're very important, though. You've got to remember these two documents here. This is a document where Walter O'Malley, the Dodgers legal counsel, is setting up a line of credit with a bank in Mexico City for Tom Greenwade. He can only carry, I think, up to $100 across the border. So this allowed Walter O'Malley to learn about the reason for this scouting trip, the true reason. And then here's just another document from Greenwade from Ricky to Greenwade, just to let him know that he is going to have some money when he gets down to Mexico City. So. Okay, now, this is a April 29th document, still sent to Tom Greenwade's home in Willard, Missouri. And it underscores the secrecy of this trip. And I'll just read you a little bit from Ricky writing. Of course, at no time now or in the future will he, Turo, our Mexican contact, know anything about the part of the objective of this trip. And it's, like I say, as far as Turo knew, this was a guise of a Brooklyn Black Dodger ball club. In that same memo, Ricky reveals his true intentions. Quoting him, I'm hoping that we will be able to get several of them signed to either Durham or Orlean contracts, or even Montreal, if we can find one good enough, unquote. Now, Greenwade knew from his meeting in the Biltmore Hotel in Kansas City that he meant colored ball players. Okay, another important document that the family provided to me. It's a three-page secret background check on our Cuban shortstop, Silvio Garcia. He's 28 years old. And on page 2, in the center of the document and at the summary at the bottom, it states that Silvio is about to be redrafted into the Cuban Army. They had two drafts, and the second draft occurred around the age of 28. So that's very important also. You'll want to remember that. And that's the third page. So by now, Tom Greenwade is in Mexico City, May 10th. He's gotten his first transmittal from Ricky. And you can feel the enthusiasm in this memorandum from Ricky when he says, Dear Tom, I'm enclosing some information herewith. Write me fully airmail, mark it personal and confidential on the outside of your envelope, and give me all the dope on the players. We can certainly use some good Mexican boys right now at both Durham and Olean. The Durham club is terrible. I don't believe you should try to sign any boys until you get a full report on everybody and know exactly what you want to do with everybody before you start to work on anybody. He writes like I do. I hope you will be able to work quietly without any newspaper publicity, whatever. And here's the neat part. If you run into anything especially good, I will send help for you, or I might even come myself. So, judging by this memorandum, Tom Greenway, the scout, was going to sign multiple players, not just one. But he didn't want to begin signing the players until he and Ricky had gotten together and decided which players they were going to sign. Okay, now here's one of the photos of Silvio. Okay. In a 1946 newspaper article, this is the only article I could find that really gave any insight into Greenway actually trying to sign Silvio Garcia. And it's kind of cryptic, but quote from the newspaper article, the Dodgers sent Greenway to Mexico City to scout an infielder, and there he contacted the Pascals. Memory of that first interview lingers with Greenway, because when he interviewed Don George Pascual, the latter unholstered a pistol and laid it on the desk between them. Meanwhile, another brother, Alfonso, opened up his coat to show his pistol as well. Greenway took no players from the Mexican League. Unquote. So my conclusion was that the Pascual brothers realized that Silvio Garcia, which was the implication in this article, was putting players in, or fans in the stands and pesos in their pockets. And they didn't want to lose that. So that would have convinced me as well. Okay, so it's obvious the Dodgers aren't going to be able to sign Garcia in Mexico. So what do? They try to sign him after the season when he goes home to Cuba. And Walter O'Malley is quoted in three different publications as being the person that the Dodgers sent to Cuba in the fall of 1943 to try to sign Silvio Garcia. This was mentioned in Murray Polner's book, 1982 biography of Branch Rickey, Roger Kahn's 1972, The Boys of Summer, and in a 1958 New York LA Times article. And in each one, O'Malley stated that when he went over there, he discovered that Silvio had been redrafted into the Cuban Army. So I thought, well, let me see if I can find someone that's still alive that might know about this. So I contacted Buzzy Bevesi by email shortly before he passed away, and I asked him about this, and he said he really didn't have any recollection of that. But it made sense to me because Greenway couldn't sign him during the summer, and they wanted to send someone to Cuba that was in on the secret, that knew his way around Cuba. O'Malley was known to vacation in Cuba quite often. And three, no one associated him really with the Brooklyn Dodger ball club or baseball. So pretty much struck out there. And I was kind of at an impasse. I didn't know where to go. I really wanted some proof, some other proof, other than just Walter O'Malley's word. And then my savior came to the rescue, the Saber Super Sleuth, microfish magician, Norman Mocht, found a January 29, 1954 New York Post article by Milton Gross, where he interviewed Walter O'Malley, and supposedly he was told by O'Malley that he was sent to Havana with a $25,000 draft to try to sign Garcia. And the way the story goes, on the plane from New York to Miami, he noticed that there was someone he recognized on the plane. It was Jimmy Walker, the former New York City mayor. And a lot of people at that time knew that Walker was trying to buy a piece of the New York Giants. So I thought, huh. So when he landed in Miami for a real short layover, he went to a telephone, he called the Dodger office, and he mentioned this. And the person he was talking to said, duck him if you can, but get to Garcia before him, because we hear he's trying to sign Garcia for the Giants. But wow. Okay, so he gets back on the plane. They land in Havana, they go through customs, and they both give some excuse that they've got personal business to attend to, and they separate. And O'Malley pays the taxi cab driver $10 extra to race him to this hotel. He calls Silvio Garcia's home, and the person that answers says, oh, he's not at home. He is now a soldado, which means soldier. So he was too late. So Walter O'Malley's task is over with, but not Milton Gross's. The day after he interviewed O'Malley, he thought, well, let's find out if this is really true. So he went over and paid a visit to Horace Stoneham, the owner of the New York Giants. And he asked him, and Stoneham admitted to trying to sign a Negro player 3 years prior. Okay, so this article was written in 54. It was 10 years after the fact, so he didn't get all the years correct. But he said he tried to sign a black player 3 years before Jackie Robinson. And Gross said, well, why haven't you mentioned this before? And I'll quote the article. Stoneham replied, it was a great reply, I wanted the baseball player, not a sideshow. Would I have mentioned it if he were white? Did it make me a bigger man that he was a Negro? I was trying to help the team, not myself. So in essence, Horace Stoneham confirmed our Walter O'Malley story, but it also told us the Giants were in on it too. And that's Horace Stoneham there. Okay, I'd hope to uncover some more proof about the Silvio Garcia scouting and signing from Roberto Echevarria's book, The Pride of Havana, but it wasn't to be. Silvio died in 1978, and Roberto told me that he had a son living in Miami. And I thought, great, you know, let me contact his son, see if he has any recollections. Well, Roberto couldn't remember his first name. I said, well, that's no problem. I'll find him. And then I stopped and I realized, there's no way. Okay, but then I thought about it a little bit more and I realized if the Dodgers never really approached his father, the family probably doesn't have any recollection of all this happening. So that was really about it. But then I found out that one of our chapter members, Monty Irvin, played against Garcia in the 48-49 Cuban Winter Leagues. And Monty would have won, he told us, he would have won the Triple Crown that season, but Garcia beat him out for the RBI title by two. He said the guy was a superb ball player, remembered him quite a bit, a gentleman, and he said he got along great with everyone. So I thought that was interesting. So it's amazing how fate works in life. The Pascuales and the Cuban Army both kept Silvio Garcia from being the man to break the color barrier. So that's... Okay, by the way, we've got a door prize. The first person to line up and ask a question gets an autographed bat from two players that played against Jackie Robinson in the 46 minor league season. And one of them is signed by Larry Megans, who's one of our chapter members. Larry played third base for Jackie's first game.
And he's outside.
And he's outside, too.
Yeah. I only wanted the sock.
Okay, give the other guy the bat.
Well, this is quite a treat. Thank you very much. I'm going to get a message. Thank you. My question is, could Garcia speak English?
That's a very good question. He played 2 years with the New York Cubans in the Negro Leagues. I believe he could speak some English, because one time he was asked, what would you do if someone called you a nigger? He said, I'd slit their throat, supposedly. So I'm... That's true. That's true. And there are some books written. I think Peter Berkman wrote a book about Cuban baseball that mentioned that exact point, that might have been one of the reasons that no one ever signed him to a major league contract, was because he could not speak English. So, yeah. Good question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
It's fine presentation. I want to offer one small correction and also a little footnote backstory here. Oscar Guerrero, who you mentioned, actually was playing in Mexico, but he's Cuban.
Oh, was he? Oh, okay, thank you. Okay.
The interesting backstory on Garcia is that, first of all, he was a better pitcher than he was a shortstop in Cuban League. Okay. And that's something that not many people pay much attention to. He was a very versatile player. But the reason, of course, that one of the reasons the Dodgers were interested in Garcia was that there was a impossible at that point to bring a black player, an Afro Latino player, to the major leagues and really deflect the attention on immigration because the player could be passed off as simply a Cuban or a foreigner, not as a black player. And actually, it would have been a kind of hollow victory had they signed Garcia, because actually the Reds, the Cincinnati Reds, beat them to the punch, but the Cincinnati Reds signed a black Cuban player who played the full season in the major leagues in 1934. Not many people pay attention to this now. Tommy De La Cruz pitched and had a 9-9 record, so he was more than a cup of coffee player. There was a lot of stuff in the press in 1944 in Cincinnati questioning whether or not they were using a black ball player. He was passed off as a Cuban, but there was enough pressure that at the end of the 44 season, he was released by the Reds and went to Mexico, where he played for two more years before he was killed in a bar brawl.
Wow.
There were several other Afro-Cuban players who played in the majors before Robinson. Bobby Escalera back in 1936, although he was a little bit lighter skinned, but Tommy De La Cruz was not that much lighter skinned. So had they succeeded in bringing Garcia up, really, it probably would have been passed off as a Cuban player and not as a black player, which would have really blunted Frank Rickey's efforts. But one quick other thing, I mean, very another interesting thing happened was that some of you know the history of Philadelphia Phillies didn't integrate until 1957, and the credit always went to Bob Kennedy, who appeared in the seventh game of the season, only played a couple games, and then was injured and never got back to the major leagues. Opening day of that same season, 1957, Chico Fernandez was the starting shortstop for the Phillies. In the Philadelphia Press, passed off as a Cuban player, not as a black player. Fernandez wrote me several letters later on about the fact that when he was traded that spring training, April of 57, from the Dodgers, who were faced with the possibility that 57 season of having five black players on the field at the same time, which even Brookman did not want to do at that point. They traded him to the Phillies, but back to Philadelphia, he couldn't find housing anywhere, so he had to live in the black neighborhood because he was black. But when he started on opening day, he was passed off as a Cuban player. This has now been kind of corrected in many people's books, and he's acknowledged as the first black player in the So there's an interesting backstory. I think if they had they gotten Garcia,
it's
would not
a very good
the same
point.
Yeah. Tommy De La Cruz had already been with Cincinnati for years. So my fine presentation.
Thank you for the input. Okay, now this next gentleman, we all need to watch tonight. He's got the most pressure of any Sabre member today. Paul is throwing out the first pitch. Sorry about that.
Compared to the pressure of my relationship with my last girlfriend tonight, it'll be nothing. In the movies 42 and the Jackie Robinson story and most of the literature that I've seen, Clyde Suford gets sole credit for scouting Robinson because he was the last person that Ricky sent to see Robinson in Chicago and then brought him to Brooklyn. And I'm just curious why you think Greenway and some of the others don't get elevated to that status. I think in the Palmer Club they mentioned Greenway and I think they might even mention George Sisler. But it's nowhere near the status that
Suport has. Yeah, I got to interview Clyde 21 years ago on the phone, and he said he was sent by Ricky just to look at Robinson's arm one day, and he had fallen and gotten hurt. I should have brought the tape recording with me, but he said, "Look, don't give me any credit. I didn't do anything." And in a 1956 Sporting News article, Tom Greenway said, Clyde was sent just to look at his arm that one day. He said, I was the only guy on the Robinson job. And rightfully so, because if Robinson would have failed, it would have been Tom Greenway's fault. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.